This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
We love Jeremy Schapp. Who doesn't? I dare anybody out there to not love Jeremy Schapp. That's how I feel about him.
Sure.
Most people feel about him. And he's back hosting Outside the Lines on the weekend. They stopped doing the weekend edition when the pandemic hit. So this weekend is the first one back. And Jeremy, how you doing? It's Michael, Don, and Peter.
It's great to hear all of your voices. And it's good to be back in the studio. I'm sitting here in Bristol. It's the first time I think I've been inside here. We did one thing outside a few months ago. First time we've done something inside, at least I have, in like 6 months. So it's good to be back.
All right, so what do we have this weekend? I see that you're going to have a piece on the, I guess it's the 30th anniversary of the famous Whitney Houston National Anthem?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the big pieces. And really well put together piece, great producer Russ Dinello, and it's, you know, I was at that game. I don't know if you guys were at the game, and it, you know, the power of that anthem and the way that it is still held up now 30 years later as perhaps the greatest rendition ever. And we spoke to a number of people who were there, including from the Giants, Otis Anderson, Carl Banks, and from the Bills, Andre Reed, and Bruce Smith. And we also interviewed Al Michaels and Danielle Smith, who's a music journalist, and I should say also Whitney's musical director, Ricky Miner, who really gets into the details of what made that rendition so memorable and the decisions that were made. And anybody who remembers it, who's old enough, who's watched it, knows why it's special. So it's a fun piece.
And that's, I don't know if it's urban legend or rumor, but there was always so much conversation about that being lip synced. Is that something you guys get into?
Well, we do mention, so I guess you could call it lip sync, but it's not. So what they would do, and this wasn't unusual, my understanding is the Super Bowl and any kind of big event like that with a big crowd. So Whitney Houston, what people heard that night was a recording that she had done, I think it was within the previous couple of weeks. She'd gone out to L.A. and she'd done this recording. And that's what they do because, and part of the reason is that's what the NFL wants. They want to, you know, at least that time they wanted to approve the rendition. And I was told by the music people who were in the piece, like, you can't really do it live with the crowd and this and that and the feedback. And so she was singing into a dead mic. She was singing. So maybe if you were really close to her, you would have heard it that night coming out of her mouth. But what the world heard was a recording. Yeah, that's the way that it was done. And they released it 16 days later, the album, and it went to the top of the charts. It went platinum. And then it was re-released, you guys probably remember, after 9/11, and it again went to the top of the charts. But the emotion that I saw from people, we asked everyone who was interviewed to watch the whole thing again, you know, all 2 minutes and 20 seconds or whatever. And the reactions, the emotion, everybody welling up. And I've watched it now, you know, many times working on the piece. And I'm not exaggerating. And I don't think of myself as necessarily the most sentimental guy, but it gives you goosebumps. It really does.
Oh, I know you very well, Jeremy. You're not sentimental at all. But I've watched it too, Jeremy, and the thing that's amazing to me, I knew that she, you know, the story that you told that the NFL wants the tape, but you could see her neck muscles quivering and the sweat on her face.
Yep.
So she was really singing that song. We just didn't hear what she was singing on the field.
No doubt. And again, Ricky Miner, her producer, a longtime collaborator, you know, he was saying, you know, with Whitney, you could do that because she was such a perfectionist in the way that she performed. If you asked her to do that, to do the song, you know, 30 times, they would be indistinguishable, the different takes from each other. He worked with a lot of other famous people, you know, it would have been totally different. They couldn't have done what she did, delivering it basically the same way that she had recorded it. It's interesting too. You know, she's famously wearing a sweatsuit, basically a jogging outfit,
yeah.
This white jogging outfit, and, you know, not like a glamorous thing. And, And I'm sure part of it was the decision, you know, this was the U.S. had just gone to war 10 days earlier, the first Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm. This is 10 days later. That's also the backdrop of the piece. But one of the reasons we were told she was dressed, you know, not in this kind of like red carpet style, but she's a big Giants fan. She wanted to immediately go to a suite and watch the game and not sit there in a big uncomfortable dress.
Can I, Jeremy, I want to ask something not related to this week's episode, but something you crossed my mind recently. One of the things I always associate you with is in the late 90s, early 2000s, covering Mike Tyson. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Tyson fight this a few months ago, whether you watched it, what you thought about it, and what you think about kind of where he is in 2021.
Well, honestly, I didn't watch it. I haven't seen it since. I made a highly principled stand beforehand saying I wouldn't watch because I think it's ludicrous. I mean, look, if they just want to throw a couple of punches and it's for charity and all that, I get it. An exhibition, essentially. But, you know, the way that I think it was the way Mike and Roy were both talking about it. And, you know, some of it's just a sell is that they were going to really fight. And I've seen, I think, as much of Mike Tyson fight live and in tape as most people, probably a lot more. And I saw Roy fight in person a lot. They were spectacular. And it just doesn't interest me seeing guys in their 50s fight. I'm sorry, maybe I'm ageist. Maybe if it were George Foreman, you know, George Foreman almost, well, he did reclaim the title when he was 46. Different. You know, George Foreman was a different kind of fighter. I just didn't have any interest. I didn't watch it. I'm very happy, though, from Mike Tyson, because I think he's in a good place now. I think that Mike Tyson, who was in so many ways tortured and who, of course, perpetrated so many crimes himself and did things that were unspeakable and criminal. He's a convicted rapist. I think he has found a measure of happiness and serenity. And I'm happy for him in that respect, that he's in a better place now.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Jeremy, the other thing that you have coming up is it's hard to believe 6 days from now it'll be the 20th anniversary of Dale Earnhardt's passing at the Daytona 500. And
yeah,
I remember being on the air for that. I actually got a big break getting a chance to be on the air because somebody, I was filling in for somebody, and I made the decision to open with that in New York, which maybe was a little controversial at the time because it's not really known as a NASCAR place, and the phone still blew up. What was it about him that just seemed to be just so nationwide for what many people kind of consider a bit of a niche sport even then, that it seemed to really translate beyond the stock car fan?
Well, that's exactly it. He transcended the sport. You know, there are only a few athletes who transcend their actual particular games. And Dale Earnhardt was someone, and look, I'm from New York. I didn't grow up watching NASCAR races. You know, the Daytona 500, I guess, that was on during the big blizzard in 78. That was kind of a watershed moment for the sport, introduced a lot more people to sport who, you know, who were stuck at home in the Northeast watching TV. But this is 20 years after that, and you know, it would get even bigger in the years after Dale Earnhardt died, but it changed, and he changed the sport. And I think the piece, which we excerpt in the show tomorrow, but there's a full hour-long treatment on ESPN and E60 on Sunday at noon, which is, you know, it's about the legacy. It's about the impact of Dale Earnhardt and the way that he dominated the sport, and he created – I did a piece – maybe it was just a couple of years after he died, and I went out and I interviewed people who, I don't think there's another way to put it, who were obsessed with Dale Earnhardt, who had dedicated much of their lives to worshiping him. Some who didn't think that he had, you know, that They knew that he had died in that crash 20 years ago, but kind of refused to let go. And there aren't a lot of people who touch fans, who touch people that way. And it was his attitude. And I talked about this with Ryan McGee, my colleague, who did the piece and did the documentary and knows a lot more about stock car racing than I do. Dale Earnhardt was Superman in a sport in which everybody, you know, is doing something that you could call superhuman. He was Superman. And when he died 20 years ago, that forced everyone in the sport to think differently about the way they approach safety. And since then, in the 20 years since Dale Earnhardt died, in the final lap of the 2001 Daytona 500, no driver in any of the three top series in NASCAR has died. And that's because when it happened to Dale Earnhardt, they knew it was time to change.
Outside the Lines, Saturday at 9 a.m., Jeremy Schapp, the host, and that show returns. And, Jeremy, one thing that might make you feel better about the lack of sentimentality, I'm nine years older than you, and I used to not be sentimental at all. Now, the guys could tell you, I cry at the opening of a Grand Union, so it'll happen.
I'm getting it. I'm looking forward to it. You know, good cry. There's nothing wrong with a good cry. It's just been a while.
Start watching This Is Us. It'll happen naturally.
But what, that's like a TV show, right?
That's right.
I know I should know that. That's like a big TV show. Yeah, I can't do it.
Don't worry. It's not a Disney property. You're fine.
It's not. Oh, it's NBC, right?
Okay. Yeah,
right.
You're good.
Fine. Never seen it.
Yeah, who cares?
Thank you, gentlemen.
Jeremy, Outside the Lines is like a TV show, too, so good luck with that. Be well, my friend.
We try.
Yes. Be good. That's Jeremy Schapp. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. He's one of the best guys in the business. He really is
a good guy.
Kay LeGreca, Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.